Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Lauren Sherman, the writer behind Puck's Fashion and Beauty Memo line sheet. And I'd like to welcome you to my new show, Fashion People. On every episode of Fashion People, I'll be talking to insiders about the stuff we're all whispering between the press releases, from M&A rumors to celebrity stylist dish to the future of legacy media. Be sure to follow and listen to Fashion People, a presentation of Odyssey in partnership with Puck, available on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I text you from the airport with the question, how do you practice love?
I answer almost immediately with one word, deliberately.
3,000 miles separate Rayshon Munthri and Carvel Wallace. Rayshon lives in Brooklyn and Carvel in Oakland. They're both writers, and they had both lived a lot of life before they met. They'd each gotten married, and they'd had kids, and then those marriages ended. They first met at a dinner party in 2019 in Brooklyn. Carvel was there with his daughter.
On the way home from that party, we're walking back to this like hotel that we're staying at, and my daughter goes, oh, I think there's something between you and that lady.
After that evening came a series of DMs and then texts, and a long-distance correspondence emerged.
That first phone call we had, we talked for like hours. Hours. And you asked me to tell you my story. Then I asked you for your story. And we, from that first conversation, we started telling each other who we were.
They were both in their 40s, and they were both feeling the need for something to shift when it came to love. So early on, when Carvel texted Rayshon that question,
how do you practice love?
And Rayshon responded with that one word,
deliberately.
It was the beginning of a pact between them. They agreed to approach this new love with intention, to interrogate the lessons they'd internalized about love and do this relationship differently. They didn't promise each other forever. They didn't promise monogamy. They still live on opposite coasts with no plans to live in the same place. They see each other as much as they can, but most of their relationship happens on the phone and over text and video chat. This month on the show, Rayshon and Carvel let us in. They shared their daily love letters and recordings to each other, these little time capsules of the beautiful moments and the hard ones too. It's the 11th, and we present Love with Rayshon Munthri and Carvel Wallace.
I'm at the lake right now. I decided to walk the lake, which is not a thing I do as much as I probably should, but I felt off kilter all day today, not really focused on work. I'm supposed to go to the gym, but am I really going to go to the gym? Let's keep it 100. Probably not. It's like I did the dishes. That felt like enough. I'm experiencing a lot of loneliness. Anyway, I thought through everything that I possibly could do to feel better. I was like, should I just spend the day playing video games? No. Should I go, like, hang out with someone? Maybe, like hook up with someone, have sex or something like that? No, I don't really feel in the mood for that right now. Seems like a lot of work. I could just do that alone. Why would I involve another person in that? And then the only thing I could really land on was, oh, I think I'm just going to walk around the lake and just like keep moving my body until I feel differently. And right now it started off raining and kind of cold, but I didn't really care. And now I've reached the other side of the lake and all the rain is to the north and the sun is to the south and the west, and these tremendous sun rays are landing on me, and all the ducks and geese and the occasional heron are all like in the water, and it's just like this wildly beautiful moment. I do feel better. I do feel like I can be a person again. I think I just needed to exorcise, not exercise, but exorcise. I guess to make space for something else. Maybe feelings for you. Anyway, I love you. Here comes a jogger. This person is running on FaceTime, and I respect it. I respect the hustle. All right, bye.
As I drive out to my perhaps first solo trip ever for a few days in Orient Point, Long Island, you call me back, and I'm still 2.5 years in, kind of thrilled when I hear from you. You are walking around the lake. I'm driving in mostly silence, and we are listening to each other breathe. I imagine what you are wearing as you walk and how cute you look. I'm half listening to what sounds like a woman start up a conversation with you about your shirt. She likes it and asks you what it says. You tell her it says, "Wu-Tang is for the children." Then she begins a whole incoherent dialogue about something at a speed and style that makes me think she's high. Hearing each other out there in the world, interacting with people who think you are alone, feels like closing in on an impossible distance, one that being in the same physical space could never afford us. All the hours we spend on the phone trying to make up the distance means that we hear so much of each other's lives. It's closer than I have ever come to knowing what someone's life might look like who isn't me. I think I do the same for you.
The way you are with me right now is that you are not with me, and your absence feels like a presence. You've said goodbye to me in the last 24 hours twice, and both times it felt like you were doing something shitty at me, even though you weren't, even though you just had to go. I want you, and I don't necessarily want to hear you say nice things, though nice things are great. I just want to be in your presence, sharing your heat, hearing your breathing, the tap of your fingers on your phone screen, the small comments you half mumble about how dumb everything is when you're scrolling. I want to be in your presence, and I can't be. And honestly, it makes me kind of annoyed with you, like it's your fault somehow.
I wanted to read this first thing in the morning because I just getting this letter, this first letter reminds me of, I don't know how, but it's still like every text message and message I get from you still feels kind of thrilling. Whatever you do with your feelings of resentment about our distance, like I never feel that towards me. I just like never do. Our thing really only works because we've just already shown each other that we can exist in exactly how we are. And I don't know if that, you know, besides I feel like my mom and my sister and my kids, this is like one of the few relationships like that where I feel like I can show up as my true self. That was one of the things that reading your letter made me feel.
I love
I love it when you're really goofy on the phone and you sing everything that you do.
The way you walk.
It's like annoying, but I never wanted to stop.
The way you smell. The care you take with your hair, your clothes, your beard, your skin, all of that feels like I am watching you love yourself.
This is so stupid, but I love it when you make food and watch like a dumb show on my Hulu account.
I love how you and your kids rap every single word of a song like that you guys have memorized. And then the feeling of like utter pride you both have afterwards.
I also love the way you eat, especially crab or chicken. Like the joy that you take. It makes me so happy to see you just really go for it.
I really love your voice.
I think anytime you have what you want, it makes me happy.
Hi, it's Resham. It's Christmas Day. I am in a town called East Marion where I rented a house for myself, and I'm by this private beach. It's on the bay side, and the dogs are running around on the beach. And it's like gray and misty, and the beach is small and rocky, and I'm just like contemplating, I guess, being alone on a day that a lot of people are with family and friends, and I chose to do this trip alone because the opportunity arose where I could do something like this, because my ex is taking the kids on a trip, and it's drizzling, and it's actually, it is what I wanted, and but sometimes when you get the things you want, they're more complex and then you could have imagined, but I'm gonna sign off.
I am sitting in the middle of a failed Christmas. My son is quarantined because his best friend tested positive, and this means that I have been alone in my apartment for what seems like the 100th day in a row. I'm also avoiding people because I don't want to put you at risk when I come see you tomorrow. I woke up this morning knowing that depression would absolutely take me if I was not careful. I talked on the phone with my cousin, I called a friend, I ordered noodles and bought eggnog. I spent an hour on the phone with my son talking about 90s movies, another hour with another friend talking about breakups and pie recipes. And when all else failed, I made an Instagram reel of me dancing to CNC Music Factory. It immediately changed my mood, and from some of the messages I got from other people, I think it changed theirs too. The hard thing is that there is no amount of closeness with you that is close enough. We could be on the phone all day, send each other a million text messages, songs, and memes, and still we are alone from each other. When we are not fighting, I feel a kind of euphoria that comes from being liked by someone that you like back. And when we are fighting, I feel like I don't care about the fight. I just want my buddy back, the person I send memes to and crack jokes with. I made that video for you. I knew you wouldn't be able to stop watching it. I made it for my ex-wife, who I know is having a really hard day. I made it for all of us, a public performance of goofy dancing to remind us that we can still laugh and be wholesome and have a good time, even though there is so much against that. I think sometimes that is what I like doing in our love. using it as a space to remember that we can be happy even when we don't want to.
I think sometimes that is what I like doing in our love. Using it as a space to remember that we can be happy even when we don't want to be. I'm sitting with that last sentence. It's 3:42 a.m. and I thought, well, it's the next day, so I can read your email. I love just reading what you write. I like watching your videos. I like watching you be goofy. I like watching you be sexy. I like all the videos that you take. I felt like I spent Christmas with you a little bit today, even though we are in very different places. It was a really nice day. And you were part of that. Your dancing video was part of that.
The distance feels the worst, the hardest, when we fight.
I just don't like to use the word fight.
I feel like we're always on some situation where there's potential for conflict.
I have so much history with that word.
We actually get a lot done through conflict, me and you.
In the shitty conversation we had 2 days ago, we spoke about our bodies moving through the world.
I don't know why we don't just call it a fight. Like, it's a fight. I mean, you love to fight.
Sometimes I feel this anger, this resentment rise up in my body, and it's like it just needs to escape.
Sometimes I feel this fear that you're gonna leave me.
I hear it in your voice.
And it makes me...
I can feel it.
Like, pull away from you.
Even over the phone.
But I know on some level that the fight isn't really about me. And it's not about you. It's not even really about us.
It's usually never about what you have done, but what has been done to me in other places by other people.
I really love how we say honest things in moments of conflict.
I want to be my full self with you. And saying exactly how I feel is a way that I love you.
It gives me a tremendous amount of trust in you. And faith in you. And it makes me really attracted to you. Like, really attracted to you.
I love that first laugh.
I'll crack a joke.
The one that breaks the tension.
But only when I can feel that you're ready.
It feels good to laugh.
I love when we return to each other.
We keep returning to each other. At least for now.
After the break, Carvel and Resham reunite.
I'm Bobby Finger.
And I'm Lindsay Weber.
And I want to tell you about a podcast I think you're going to love.
Who Weekly is a podcast about everything you need to know about the celebrities you don't.
Does celebrity news stress you out?
Are there too many people you've literally never heard of?
Check out Who Weekly, a podcast hosted by Lindsay Weber and me, Bobby Finger.
Each episode goes deep into the biggest Whoelebrity stories of the moment. And if you're still confused, we even have a weekly call-in episode where we'll answer the most burning listener queries.
Who Weekly airs twice weekly with brand new episodes on Tuesdays and Fridays. Listen and follow Who Weekly on the Odyssey app or wherever else you get your podcasts.
I'm Shimol Yai, and I have a new podcast called The Competition. Every year, 50 high school senior girls compete in a massive scholarship competition.
I wouldn't say I have an ego problem, but I'm extremely competitive.
All of the competitors are used to being the best and the brightest, and they're all vying for a huge cash prize.
This will probably be the most intense thing you've ever gone through in your life.
I remember that feeling because I was one of them. I lost. But now, I'm coming back as a judge, and also a kind of teen girl anthropologist. Because if you want to understand what it's like to be a young woman in America today, The Competition's not a bad place to start.
Hopefully, no one will die on stage tonight.
From Pineapple Street Studios and Wondery, this is The Competition. Follow The Competition on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to The Competition early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Would you say?
I'm so late.
It's okay. I had my feelings about it, but fortunately, I have plenty of time to work through my feelings about it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, really.
We're together. It's the end of December 2021.
It's winter, and it's not as cold as it should be because of global warming.
We're out almost at the tip of the North Fork of Long Island.
The sun is like setting super early. We only have a little bit of daylight.
I'm ready to go. What's up?
You have something poking at your pocket.
I thought I was going to be much madder at you.
Reuniting with you, I think about...
When I think about returning to you...
Being all up in your eyelashes.
I think about those awkward first moments when we can't look at each other. I think about...
I like when we're driving and you put your hand on my knee.
I like when we're lying in bed and all of your limbs are wrapped around me and it's like almost too much, like I can barely breathe, but I like it.
I like you in the morning a lot. You are, I don't know, I feel like I see a side of you that like nobody else sees, and that's really nice. You're like undone, and I like that.
Anyway, just know that I felt bad.
Well, that's good. I wanted you to feel bad. Mission accomplished. All right, I'm turning this off.
All right, bye.
Bye. Thanks for hanging out with us. Probably gonna have sex now. Bye.
It's really early in the morning on New Year's Eve.
And I have a plane to catch.
I wake up to the sound of you.
My daughter gets mad if I don't spend New Year's Eve with her.
Gathering your things to go to the airport.
It's hard to leave because I want you to come with me. I want you to be with my whole family, my kids and your kids. I want everyone to be together.
I just, I get really quiet. There's really nothing more to say.
I mean, leaving you doesn't get easier because each trip, it's like, oh, this is the best trip we've ever had. Like, this was the one.
The last thing you do is come over to me in the bed and hold me. We hold each other.
Yeah, you can drink.
Okay. This is Mira.
Hi.
This is Sue.
Hi.
I'm gonna be really careful because all of my valuables are in this car. But it's chill because we're just talking. Are they gonna put Mira's burp in the podcast?
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like that's pretty good material, Mira's burp. How were both of your days at school? Like good. How good? What?
Good.
It was good. That's all you wanna, just good. Mm-hmm. Sue, how was your day?
Fine, I guess.
Fine, I guess. A day late. But I'm here. I feel like the last few days since you left have been difficult. You left early Friday morning. My kids came back late the night before. Only last night did I start to feel human again, capable again. But that's mostly because it was the first night that my 8-year-old didn't scream herself to sleep. She was with her dad for a week. We were all adjusting to coming back to each other. She is a highly emotional and powerful child. When the 8-year-old struggles, often there isn't much I can do but wait it out. There's a rage she must express. That has everything and nothing to do with me. I have tried intervening, loving her, holding her, giving her ice cream. Nothing works until it's done. While I wait, my relationship to my own body is strange. I can only lay on my bed. I can't cry. I'm on highest alert, but I've also given up. My body is both things. After it's over, I cannot move to take off my clothes, brush my teeth, deal with the kitchen. The most loving thing I can do for myself is just lay there. So usually I do. Sometimes my 12-year-old will crawl into bed and lay with me. You don't see so much of this side of us. We all perform, I think, when you are with us. That's how taken we all are with you. The days my youngest was struggling, I struggled too. Sometimes I often think I hold it way longer than they do. I felt deep shame in my body for being unable to do my job as a mother, for letting her down, for perhaps revealing myself to be no better than my father's rage. From the moment of birth, we are moving away from each other. It's a continual grief.
I'm going to try and keep this brief. The first reaction I have is that you are such a tremendously good writer. Like, it is really something to me. Like, what a tremendously good writer you are. I also want to tell you that your work is valuable. The work that you're doing here on love and the body and on parenting is really powerful. So I just want to say that. I'm going to get that off the thing. Your writing picked at a lot of trauma that I've been trying to keep together. I'm almost trying to keep shit together. Or because I don't want to, you know, the body I'm in, this like black man, it's like big black body. It's like if I start losing it, people are really like, whoa, what the fuck? And I just, so I have to like pick and choose my spots to lose it. The work that I'm doing, sometimes I feel like I'm just waiting in these dark, painful spaces. And I'm just like, what am I doing this for? So I'm trying hard to like stay. This is another situation in which I've been holding a lot together over the past couple of days, writing this fucking Trayvon Martin piece. It's supposed to be 1,500 words and I have 2,100 words and the thesis is fuck this country and fuck you. That's basically all I have and I cannot file that. And so I'm holding a lot in right now. And then my daughter, who we've talked about this, has breakdowns and it's amazing. It's like, it's wild. And she did it again last night. And I feel so overwhelmed, and that what you described about laying in the bed and not being able to let it go when the kids have let it go, and not being able to like brush your teeth or do the dishes, feeling like you don't even really exist, like you are and are not a person after a thing like that, and the shame that comes from being a parent to a child who has like lost it like that, I think you're right about everything. There's not a thing that you wrote that I don't think you're like wildly accurately correct about. The thing that we do in love probably does have a lot to do with making space for the other person to be in touch with their grief. We live in such a traumatized world that love can't just be a thing where two people get together and then enjoy the fluttering of butterflies and the arc of rainbows. It's like that can't happen. When you finally find love in this world, you have to spend a lot of time grieving everything that's been done to you. Because you finally have a space to do it. And that's what's hard about sustaining love. Yeah, I think that's it.
So today I'm really just sitting with what you have told me, and you're right. There's like not, I can't understand what it is to be you. I can't understand what it is to have to write that piece that you're working on or anything like that. I have my experiences, which are mine, but I can like sit and listen. And I can like notice how, as our relationship goes on, you're kind of letting me into these uncomfortable, like painful places. And I think that's like, for me, one of the deepest forms of love. And I'm honored to be able to like sit with what you share with me, what you let me into. I don't think I can do anything with it beyond just like listen. But I hope that knowing that like I am here, like willing to do that, makes it feel like a little less of a burden to carry alone.
I dreamt last night that you broke up with me. You were on your way to do a charity event, and you called me and told me that you needed to move on from this and that you had gotten everything you needed from this relationship. It felt inevitable. In the dream, I told someone that I knew eventually you'd do that. You had, in fact, been warning me from the beginning that this might happen. I have come to accept its possibility, both within the dream and also within the real world. After I woke up, it took me minutes to be sure that you hadn't actually left. It took me hours, really. It has taken me all day. My day was clouded by that feeling. I woke up feeling like I needed to remind myself that I might be without you, terrified of what it would mean to forget that. Remembering all the times you've told me that you might need to leave me in order to find something that you need to find. I walked in search of a farmer's market that wasn't there. I walked until my feet blistered. I cried. I wore a new hairstyle. I felt cute. I missed you. I bought a ton of vegetables. I baked a cake. I talked with my daughter's boyfriend about life. I gave her a hug, even though she has COVID and is isolated in her room and no one is supposed to hug her. I hugged her because I knew she was missing it. I hugged her because I needed a hug. Sometimes you have to go away from me and it makes me feel sad. Sometimes it feels like every person is a poor imitation of you. Sometimes that scares me because I wonder what I'll do about that when or if you have to leave. It's nice telling you what has happened to me and hoping that you'll understand.
When or if we ever live closer than 3,000 miles apart, I'm not sure that I'd want or need to write love letters to you, or that I'd need to receive them. I think I have a pretty healthy imagination, but honestly, I can't imagine our love in long-term proximity to each other. What we could be feels endless, and also all the ways we could not be, the ways we could end. That also feels endless. I have done this kind of imagining before with other lovers. I've put myself on imaginary beaches with unborn children or imaginary grocery shopping, dreamy, unreal dinner parties with that Instagram-worthy collection of cool friends. As of late, I have paused on imagining our love into the future. And I think it's because I am in a practice of gratitude for what we do have. I think I got caught up with you in the past, thinking about future summers together, whether you wanted me to come out with my kids, whether it was too much for you. Then I would get my feelings hurt because you said or didn't say something about plans that I hadn't explicitly made clear to you that I even wanted. It's often embarrassing to admit the Disney origins of my hetero dreams, but I can admit I think I wanted you to be a prince character who made grand gestures and whisked me away in your arms for the summer. I hope this for myself. If I feel it would be cool and dope to spend a summer in Oakland with my kids, hanging out with you and others, I'll ask if you're interested. If you say no because of X reasonable reason, I'll pull myself together and make some other plans. Because that's the kind of grown-up I think I want to be. I want for us to truly both be free. So,
I think imagination about the future.
Imagining a future with you.
I like to wear it like a loose garment.
I tend to not do it.
It can comfort me in times of stress. But when it starts to bring me anxiety or fear, like, oh, I really have to have this thing and maybe it won't happen.
Femmes like myself have long been afflicted by small imaginations when it comes to the lives we can live.
Then I have to put it down. I have to take it off.
The kinds of relationships we can have with men, women, humans, trees, animals, water. I love how we love each other because it requires no future.
I love you.
It requires a recognition of the past and what we have learned.
I love you.
But mostly, we are present, which I'm realizing more and more is the actual dream of loving someone.
I love you. I hope we don't sleep on I love yous. Such a simple phrase, way played out, super dated, just very, you know, basic content, but still the shit really hits right. I love you. It's like winning a lottery to love someone. I love you. What a thing to say over and over again. I'm a weirdo. I really am. I love me too, actually, since we're at it. I'm going to end it there.
This is the 11th. Today's episode was written by Resham Mantri and Carvel Wallace. This episode was produced by me, Chloe Persinos. Production support from Kristen Torres. We were edited by Leela Day. Editorial support from Josh Gwynn, Max Linsky, and Eric Mennel. Fact-checking by Isabel Christo. Sound design, mixing, and engineering by Hannes Brown. Original music by H. Hunt and cooked by Raj. Additional music courtesy of Marmoset. Our head of sound and engineering is Raj Makija. Episode art by Jonathan Konda. Visuals and marketing by Grace Chen, Moira Curran, Hadim Dang, Kurt Courtney, and Meredith Rice. Legal services for Pineapple Street by Crystal Tupja at Odyssey. The executive producers at Pineapple Street are Max Linsky and Jenna Weiss-Berman. Our executive editor is Joel Lovell. Thanks for listening to The 11th.